All right, we're back for another session. I'm Nate Turner here again with Kevin King, and we're in Q4. Weather's changing, seasons are changing, and that means that planning season is upon us. Whether folks are either in the middle of it, getting ready for 2026, or starting to think about what that might look like, depending on company planning cycles, there's a lot. And then we're doing it in the middle of a time when there's a lot of change and a lot of uncertainty. So our approach today, we actually went out and asked five different folks through the industry the same question. And then myself, Kevin, and Ryan from our team all answered that question as well. So we have eight different perspectives to the question, which is, if you could give one piece of advice to B2B marketing leaders heading into 2026, what would it be? So we are literally going to read verbatim what each person wrote. Again, these were all written without knowing what anyone else wrote. So they're all written in isolation. So any commonalities and themes that might come through are just sort of a coincidence and a convergence on some similar opinions. So,
and validating.
Validating, for sure. So with that, we will go ahead and jump in. Kevin will kick it off for us. We're going to run through those, and then when we finish, we're going to shift into the go through some of the slides and data from the State of B2B Go-to-Market Report that was put out by Growth Unhinged. So with that, you can go ahead and get us started.
Sweet. Yeah, first one, coming from our alma mater, Sprout Social, Marino Fresh, the VP of marketing there. His response was, quote, emphasis on speed and agility in planning and execution in 2026. With AI changing the marketing landscape rapidly, the best thing marketing leaders can do is to move fast. Speed will beat perfection in 2026. So plan fast, execute fast, iterate fast, and learn fast.
Yeah.
End quote.
Yes. So speed, progress over perfection, and execute are, I think, a lot of what kind of came through on that one. And additionally, part of what we want to kind of just discuss with each one is the nature of the question here elicits a fairly conceptual response from each person. Cause no one's going to have one piece of advice that's super tactical because they don't know if that applies. So, with that, we're also just wanted to, kind of help it not be entirely conceptual and talk through a little bit of some different ways that can allow for you to kind of apply some of this. So a couple of things I wrote down for this tied to Marino's comment was plan quarterly. And then just, I think with that kind of aligning with leadership on the approach and measurement. So it will help a ton for marketing leaders if they get alignment with the exec and the board to know that, hey, this is our approach. There's a lot of change. Here's how and when we're going to communicate. This is the extent of what we're going to measure. If you ask us to try to get way more certainty on ROI, it's probably going to grind everything to a halt. Let's align on this and probably just adjust quarterly. I think are a couple of things that would really help with the speed and agility that he talked about and just allowing you to then execute fast.
Yes. I think this is going to be also not a spoiler alert, but a theme that is kind of a theme throughout, but it makes sense. The industry is moving fast as implied. And I think more of an observation than anything is that it's a good thing for us, I think, as an industry, not to move fast without being thoughtful. But I think historically, which is a little bit of a spoiler from my probably response, but historically, marketing teams and businesses in general just spend a lot of time in this planning season and not moving fast. And so if anything, this pace that things are I guess moving towards, the pace that we're moving towards, is I think a good thing, because I think we're just gonna get hopefully more done quicker, which is pretty obvious. But yeah, I agree with that on how you can enable more speed and agility. It's just I think the key is gonna be communication.
Yeah.
I think internally, especially at in-house teams, if they're big teams, closing the loop and getting feedback on things is still going to be critical. You're not going to be able to do things without getting full buy-in. So if anything, I would say marketing leaders should also they should take this advice, but also enable the team and themselves to let them like move freely, like break things and move fast, and like nothing's permanent. You can go back and fix it.
Sure. Yep. Cool. All right. So the next one comes from Camille Rexton. He's the founder of 42 Agency. So a lot of like RevOps work, analytics, working a lot in the kind of B2B SaaS space there. So Camille said, invest more in brand and learn how to measure brand. Stop equating brand to direct traffic because you need to do more qualitative surveys and stuff. Direct traffic doesn't necessarily mean that your brand is working. You need to understand qualitatively how people think of a brand and what they are considering when they think of your category.
Yeah. And I agree this is important. And the exciting thing for people who own organic, which is obviously our bread and butter, brand is playing such a bigger part in that. I'd say tactically, the thing that I think of when he's talking about this, which we've been talking a lot about, is dashboarding and investing in some tools that surface sentiment, right? Yeah. Whatever that may mean. I mean, historically, it means, you know, positive, negative sentiment on a brand. But I think that that's big. That's crucial for the LLM visibility component, because LLMs are actually like communicating a sentiment about a brand.
Correct.
Yes. So there's twofold. But I think that's the bigger tactical takeaway, is like updating and iterating on the dashboarding and reporting you have to incorporate that into your workflow and day to day.
Yeah.
While also, which we don't have to get into the weeds on it now, but making sure that you are being proactive about whatever your brand reputation looks like online. That can be PR, digital PR. That should be a big focus for you then this year, if that's going to be something you're investing in, or even just like some, you know, low hanging fruit opportunities for you to control your brand narrative on your website.
Yep.
Which I'm happy to elaborate on.
Yeah. And I mean, building on that reputation management, we've talked for a while now about the way LLMs are incorporating all of that, and really pulling in a lot of perspective on company and the product and everything beyond what you put on your site. So I think that, G2, Trust Radius, like all that type of stuff, I agree. You know, brand monitoring and sentiment, I think are a big one. Engagement as well. I think it's a really good point for Camille that, you know, the direct traffic, I think, has been, you know, for a long time, it's sort of been like, oh, paid search and paid social and even SEO and some of those channels have been very measurable, very ROI driven, and everyone sort of said, well, brand is brand, and are we getting more direct traffic, or, you know, that kind of stuff. And I agree, the importance of it has shifted, and it is necessary to go beyond that. But it, you know, I think engagement, sentiment, all that stuff really does, you know, go a couple layers deeper. So obviously our perspective, he probably has a much refined take on some of what that actually means, but I thought it was a really good addition to the batch of advice here. So
one thing I'd add on that too, I think, is this is the time that I hope that, because I agree with this advice, but like that we can finally connect brand and organic efforts, because historically there was always this like focus on non-brand is like the big thing for like SEO teams and all that, right? And that's obviously very important, but the tides are shifting and like those two things are tightly connected. So like, let's just all accept that those two play together. If you're doing really well on the non-brand side and brand is going up, that's likely a correlation, and you can associate that. There are data points you can pull, but like, there's been historically some pushback there.
Yeah.
Like, oh, well, our brand, well, we did this one thing on PR. No, like there's a whole holistic effort there that is very important.
Yeah.
So I will move on to the next one. Ryan Sargent, our VP of content strategy at 10Speed. Is that what the kids do? His quote, marketing in 2026 will be defined by two forces, automation and alchemy. Automate the routine work to stay visible, then pour your creativity into the bold. Marketing in 2026 will be defined by two forces, automation and alchemy. Automate the routine work to stay visible, then pour your creativity into the bold human ideas that make your brand unforgettable. Stop chasing perfection, ship fast, feed the machines context, and save your magic for the moments that actually convert humans.
Yes.
Thoughts?
Yeah, I think my takeaway, you know, automate the blocking and tackling, and then build to differentiate, which I think does somewhat, again, tie into speed and progress over perfection. I think there a little bit of that does kind of come out as a theme. But, you know, on like the automating side, your team's working through a lot. Like, you should be doing a lot of automation on the PM tool side, brief creation, not just content, like creative briefs, any of that kind of stuff. Ideation, repurposing, these are things that can and should be going faster, taking up less of a team's time. And then on the other side, video, events, podcasts, like thought leadership, those are the types of things that you really can be, like he said, you know, kind of using the creativity, the human layer, doing things that are going to really kind of like capture that, drive conversions, all that kind of stuff. So
yeah,
I think there's it's an interesting framing to like the automation and alchemy aspect of it, because I do think there is it kind of becoming a bit more of that two track. So from a planning standpoint, I would just say, you know, thinking through that and making sure that where your resources are going into the areas that you can impact the most and automate where you can.
Yeah. The historical quote unquote hamster wheel that I see people talking about on LinkedIn, and when it comes to content teams and marketing teams, like feel like you're on the endless hamster wheel. Like that in my mind is like the fundamentals of what keeps things going. And what I feel like Ryan's saying here is like, there's a way to just not have that feel like such a burden. You can, mm-hmm. to your point, automate it and all that, which is great. Invest in tools, and, you know, AI is a big component of that. But the exciting part of that is being able to now finally, I think myself as a marketer, I always like wanted to be able to do big, bold, creative things that were the things that could, you know, be bigger levers for growth, acquire pet backlinks. And, you know, I used to be a big proponent for interactive content and or interactive things. And like, you know, you can go do that. Like maybe there's tools and stuff that you couldn't do because you had to focus on pumping out a bunch of content every month. Like,
yeah.
So I think that's a very a good piece of advice, and also I think an exciting one.
Yeah, I agree. All right. So next is Bernard Huang, from the founder of ClearScope. So Bernard said, B2B marketing is seeing its biggest shakeup, with the old B2B playbooks losing resonance. Email marketing open rates are declining. SEO traffic is dwindling. Cold email rates are still dismal. And ROAS, return on ad spend, is getting worse. So what is there to do? Recognize that the modern buyer is a different breed of buyer. They want to try before they buy. They need your product or service to be far better than basic AI outputs. And most of all, they need to trust and respect your brand. What do you think about that?
I mean, yeah. I think Bernard's spot on. He's probably cutting straight to it more so than anybody. You know, yeah, it's tough. It is a different world we're in now. And you need to put your content where your buyer is at in the journey, which is not a change in things, but this ties back, I think, to just the brand sentiment stuff. Like, you need to be focusing your efforts into the areas that are going to make your brand stand out. And that may include some of the fundamentals, which we've touched on, that you have to do, but like there's bigger, bolder things. I mean, like, this is actually starting to feel like a nice kind of summary mm-hmm. of like the previous things.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, innovate playbooks, adapt to modern buyer, and earn trust are certainly, you know, three themes that I think come out of there. I think his point that your product or service needs to be better than basic AI outputs is like fantastic. And that is true across a lot of like the product side. Like, yeah, your product needs to be better than what you can churn out with Replit or Lovable or Cursor, you know, any of that kind of stuff. Like, and yeah, I think there's a lot there. So the thing that struck me around like the playbook side is, think about how many people in the B2B world right now are talking about three things, Reddit, PR, and intimate events.
Mm-hmm.
Those are not they weren't not talked about, but they were not nearly as prevalent 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And I think even just that's a small slice of the whole picture, you know, that I think there is a lot on the playbook side that is changing.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think there's a lot there. And I think this is probably more than anything, probably just a good summarization of what a lot of marketing leaders are feeling as they're planning is what are the ways we need to change the playbook and what is going to work, which we'll get into more as well around the B2B go-to-market report that we'll get into in just a little bit. But
yep.
Yeah. Anything else on that one?
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, like, it's exciting to think that I think the one other point on the trust and respect your brand and that your product needs to be better is that we're at a time where hopefully there won't be. It's weird. We are in a time where there's so many new products popping up because of AI, mm-hmm. Which, I mean, naturally that means everything isn't great. There's a lot of noise, but I think it'll be quicker that those, we'll see that the ones that aren't as strong die off quicker because of this. Mm-hmm. And historically that's what should happen is like the good products, or at least the best products in categories should win. And I think that's great. And I would just kind of put a point on it that like even great marketing at this stage within software, especially or B2B, is not going to mask a bad product.
Yep. Agree.
Yeah. And also if you want to get schooled, I'd highly recommend getting a demo of ClearScope because Bernard will
yes.
teach and do a really great
he's fantastic.
Background on things, all things SEO. All right. I'm going to read mine. Yeah, so we're on to me. Kevin King, co-founder of 10Speed. Get out of your own way and don't be afraid. Why can't I read this like I'm a normal person saying my own words? But yeah, I'll read it verbatim. Get out of your own way and don't be afraid to fail. One of the biggest blockers we are seeing in B2B marketing is teams overthinking every move, stalling out because they're either waiting for a silver bullet, anticipating some major product change from Google or OpenAI, or avoiding anything that feels like it might be from the old playbook. Fundamentals still work. I'm a big fan of that. Stay current, but don't let every trend or headline derail what's already in flight. If you're focused on your audience and aligned with their buyer journey, 75% of your strategy is likely to be effective, because it can't be 100, but that's a whole lot better than the 0% success rate that comes from doing nothing, which we do see quite a bit. Like,
yep,
we have had many experiences where we build things and indecision is there and you don't get anything done.
Yeah, indecision I think has plagued a lot of people this year. And I wrote a pretty long LinkedIn post about all that, which, you know, I think will end up kind of coming through in what I wrote for this as well.
But I think that might have subconsciously influenced my answer.
Yeah, but the inaction is material. You know, I was just talking to a CMO yesterday who shared that when talking to CMOs recently, there are a number of people who kind of got like the analysis paralysis, don't know what to do, and are now at that point where they're realizing like, oh my gosh, I'm behind. I got to catch up. There's a lot I got to put into place. So again, a big part of why we wanted to talk about this in general, but I think that there's a lot going on, and to your point, what you've got, if you're really just staying focused on your buyer, adding value, knowing where they spend time, that's far better than doing nothing.
Yeah. And also those percentages were made up, of course. Even 50% of your strategy working is better than none of it working, yep. right? Just it's not going to all work all the time.
Yep. Totally. Cool. And so then next we had Emily Kramer, founder of MKT1. Emily said, I think generalists will overtake specialists on in-house marketing teams, and working with specialists on the agency side to augment your team will be the best model as teams stay lean. So my best advice is you need to add breadth to your skill set, learn from learning to build AI workflows and agents to running differentiated high-impact campaigns to stand out amidst the AI slop. I call this new generalist skill set for the generative AI era, a gen marketer. Yes. So, so Emily's been talking a lot about the gen marketer, which I think makes a lot of sense. Definitely matches a lot of what we're seeing. Her point on is the best model as teams stay lean. That's certainly something that we've seen and heard. Like the size of company and the amount of marketers to the size of company has definitely changed. And there are a lot of companies who have a few folks covering a lot of areas, wearing a lot of hats, and augmenting with multiple consultants and agencies.
Yeah.
That's definitely something that we're encountering a lot.
Yeah. I mean, this is a throwback to the T-shaped marketer, which I think was Amaz Rand Fishkin thing. But the T-shaped marketer being the generalist that just goes deep in one area, right? Like, that's always been a thing that I think we've supported or believed in as a potential force multiplier, added value for an org. So this kind of I feel like is a new version of that. And instead of the T-shape, the one that goes down, you're deep in one area but good across all, it's almost like the T part becomes the agency component to some extent, or you can make a different letter with it. But I do think that the era of the generalist is there. So and AI should enable people to probably pick up a lot more skills.
Yeah. It's interesting you said that, because my thought was the T part would maybe be AI, but actually AI is probably actually what allows more breadth more than anything.
Yeah.
Because it supports you in other areas. But I do think, from a planning standpoint, I think this can kind of read as personal career advice, but yeah. I also actually think that it is very helpful for anyone planning, how do we manage headcount and what do we want to do with, what are the most important roles we need? I think this is actually, extremely helpful for that. And that's true. I mean, that's a lot of what we've seen currently. We as an agency and I think in other agencies are, in most cases, have adapted to a lot of the stuff with LLMs and, figured out a lot of stuff faster than in-house, because we have so many more at-bats, more places that we're learning faster. And so I think that's definitely an area lately. It's no one has an AEO specialist on their team, in-house, So I think that's a perfect example of where leaning onto people creates that speed. So I just put deep dive into AI workflows, figure out what you can do well, whether you personally, if you're the only marketer or your team, and then, where it makes sense to outsource.
Yep. Yeah, I agree.
Cool. And then we'll jump into mine, Nate Turner, co-founder of 10Speed. I said, don't wait around for the dust to settle on change to make decisions. Change is constant and has been even more so in the last 18 months and doesn't appear to be slowing down. Whether you're relying on an in-house team or an outside partner to hit your goals, make sure they can pivot quickly as necessary and get started now. And so, go ahead. I'll let you jump in.
I will say, because I think I was saying ours had some overlap, or thought some had some overlap, but I think there's actually a big difference here, which is, because I was saying about indecision, you're talking about being able to quickly change direction, which is, I think, important. And I think historically teams have not wanted to do that. So I think from a planning perspective, it's about finding ways to make sure that the team is enabled to do that, whether that be shorter planning cycles so you can have a time to revisit it. I wouldn't say monthly. We do quarterly. I think our quarterly roadmaps have we've been doing that for a long time, have been helpful. And maybe you can just take that approach, right? Break it down into smaller chunks so that you're not feeling like you're committing to things for a long period of time. And if you're small, you could probably do it 60 days or 90 days, or 90 days is a quarter, but you know what I mean? So I think that's a powerful piece of advice for everybody is to that should enable you to get out of your way from indecisiveness is that give yourself the freedom to change direction if you need to quickly, because now you have more tools than ever to be able to do it.
Yep. Yeah. And a big part of what I didn't want to put in here because it would make it for a quite long quote, but a big part of that is if you have done as a company, like haven't touched anything around LLMs or AEO yet, like the reality is there are people who have, even to your point earlier, maybe 50% hit rate or, you know, whatever. The amount of, like, the speed at which things move now, the amount of work it takes to catch up, let alone outperform competitors, by sitting that out for 6 months to see, is it worth investing in SEO? Is it worth investing in AEO? Like, all these different things, I think, are slowing down. And the clients that we have that have kept their foot on the gas have seen, like, basically no fall off in organic traffic where it matters anyway. There's, you know, certainly some pockets that do, but versus, you know, some of the stats that are out there about the amount of organic traffic loss and shift to LLMs.
Yep.
And are seeing good perform, like they're hitting on multiple fronts because they didn't slow down. So now their competitors have to work that much harder to catch up. So and that's my point in that post was, like, I broke down from 2020 through 2025 all the excuses or reasons why people were waiting on the sidelines or waiting a quarter or waiting how this plans out. Right. Like, there's so many things that just come every single year. Like, like you're just missing out. And now with the way that everything's speeding up, I think it's just putting you that much further behind. So
yep,
that was a big part of my point. But we can move on to the last one.
Yeah. Me or you?
You can read it.
Yeah. Kyle Poyer, founder, Growth Unhinged, said, quote, too many companies are keeping their teams busy tinkering with all the legacy go-to-market channels, plus AI search, intent-based outbound, founder brand, and testing out the latest AI tooling. It's time for the experimentation window to close and the period of ruthless scaling to begin. And the one thing I'll say is that actually is a nice segue into the next topic that we'll talk about, because I think that's a trend for the past year is the experimentation.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
I'll stop there and let you.
Yeah. So again, I think this is, we've had multiple, you've probably picked up on, again, these were all done separately, but there is very much a theme of speed, progress over perfection, and committing to execution that have come through you know, nearly all of these. And so I think that makes a lot of sense. And we are going to transition in a moment to go through the Growth Unhinged report that we mentioned that Kyle authored or co-authored, I don't remember. And so I'd kind of looked up, and like, they're similar to your point, Kevin, they're, you know, some quotes around like 80% today is better than 100% tomorrow. and like Colin Powell, I think, was kind of somewhat famous for quoting like, make a decision when you have 40 to 70% of the information, because, you know, waiting and trying to get that last 30%, you know, closes that window for action. And obviously moving with less than 40% is probably prone to error.
Yeah.
Certainly not just swinging in the dark by any means, but I think that there's a lot of legacy wisdom that applies here. And I think that Kyle's points are spot on, that there's been a lot of testing. I like that he used the word tinkering, because I think that has been like, we're doing legacy stuff and then we're just kind of tinkering with all these tools and other things, and it's kind of just time to commit. And so again, to the point of planning for next year, I think it's time to say, here's the things that we're committing to and we know we're going to do and we're going to scale, and then still having some, you know, you always should have an experimentation
lane.
A lane of what you're doing. I think there's some great stuff there.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, I think if at this point there's been enough time, testing, and changes that like we're at a point where things should be, everything's going to keep changing, but like you should have a good handle on what's working. So invest, focus, and then make pivot, change quickly later if it's not working again, you know?
Yep. Absolutely. Cool. So we're about to shift to the report. I will say I appreciate all the contributions to kind of providing that advice from everyone. So we will have links to LinkedIn profiles in the show notes if you want to go connect or check out content from any one of the folks that we mentioned. And so with that, this was recently released, the State of B2B Go-to-Market Report. And so it's a 30-page report. Not going to go through that whole thing. But Kyle did a nice breakdown of kind of like the key takeaways and some charts there. So we're actually just going to kind of walk through and give some context. So this obviously spans all go-to-market. There's, you know, outbound sales and all kinds of stuff that, you know, we will we'll certainly kind of tailor our commentary to stay in our lane a bit and not necessarily talk about everything. But definitely some interesting stuff. So we thought, again, in the context of planning for next year, there's definitely some good insights and things to take away. So we can go ahead to the first slide. And so this is kind of out of everything that they surveyed on. Again, you can see the methodology. We'll link to the summary. It was 195 B2B go-to-market professionals that were surveyed. So that's kind of there, and they have more on the methodology you can check out. But inbound, number one, and specifically kind of the context that was set there was content creation to generate leads. So something we're obviously very familiar with. That is still considered the primary motion for B2B companies at this point. I think it does tailor into some of these other areas, and we know content creation is a very broad concept. I mean, all the way, case studies, webinars, blog posts, like that's pretty broad. So it spans a lot, but there's certainly a lot that goes into that, but definitely validating. And I think some of the following data points will give more context to what inbound means, since that's a pretty big channel overall.
But for sure. And it encompasses more than just like an SEO and all that. But at the end of the day, it's tied to some of the points earlier. I know we talked about the old playbook, but like it looks like that a lot of the channels that are still fruitful are tied to things associated with the old playbook, inbound being the number one thing that people are investing in, content creation and all that. Like just adapt to the modern like buyer. Like people have been, I think the takeaway I got from this is that like there's a perception that, and we talked about this on a previous episode, that you need to like completely abandon what you were doing before, when this data just supports like a shift in focus on like the same kind of things you were doing, but just in a different way. Mm-hmm. But like the narrative online is just abandon, like no, that's not working. Like shift, go do something different, try something new. And like, it's really just a little bit of a optimization amongst the channels and things that you've been focused on.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that, like I said, some of the later points, and then we'll wrap up. There's some insights as well on kind of like, AI adoption and the ROI there that I think gives some really good context to what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the next slide is broken down. Go ahead, Luke. So taking that same categorization, first looking by ACV, so less than 5K, 5 to 25K, and then greater than 25K. So we have clients across all three of those. I personally was not surprised by this. You have inbound number one in that middle category, product-led, and far more common at that low ACV, and ABM far more common at the high ACV.
Yep.
So not terribly surprising, but...
Sounds also not different from how it used to be. That's not that's no shade on the report. It's more of like just validation. So good job on that.
Yeah.
Kyle.
Yeah. And then obviously inbound still holding, 16 and 19% on those other ACVs. And so I think that makes sense. And like I said, I don't want to comment too far, but paid digital also pretty common that we see that a lot on that lower ACV. Hitting, the 26% for less than 5K and then down to 4% for that higher ACV.
Yeah.
Definitely tracks. But again, there's a lot of nuance into how people perceive each of these categories, or, do they consider paid digital spend part of account based or separate? Like, that's why I don't want to get too far into all of it. But and then the next slide, taking the same stuff and looking at it by where they're at on ARR scale.
Yep.
So again, have clients in all of these. And I think that my takeaway on this was logical, inbound being number one on those, you know, 1 million to greater than 10 million.
Yep.
But product led being number one on that lower.
Yeah.
That one I wasn't sure, but like, I guess on the inbound side, it made sense. Like, you're going to have more brand, you have more domain authority. Like, you've just been building longer.
Yeah.
That all of that can,
yeah,
kind of accumulate, I guess.
I think the other thing too, which is, you can push back on me if you disagree, obviously, but like the product led and there's a connective line between the product led and the inbound stuff for both sides of that.
Totally.
So like, yeah, product led does not like succeed. Like, you invest there because your product is capable of being product led, but that is directly tied to, even outbound, you can do like that align through all of those, but tied to the inbound efforts that feed into the product.
Yep.
So I think that that's important. More, I guess, pointedly, it's like, makes sense that those two things are winning for those categories. Even if you looked at, I think, the inbound on the, that was another big, that was like the second biggest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or one of the, yeah, on the by average ACV.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was the third outside of paid, but yeah.
Yeah. Yes, I agree. Ultimately, they're almost like inbound and outbound, product led and account based.
Yeah.
Paid digital and partners are almost kind of like subcategories there, and there's going to be some Venn diagram.
Right. Totally.
So, yeah, for sure. So, anyway, I don't know.
Paid digital, RIP.
I did think it was interesting that, the paid digital side was larger for the higher revenue side.
Yeah, that's
I know that we tend to see a lot of the paid spend on the early stage, lower revenue companies where they're just trying to capture that demand and they haven't built everything else up.
Right.
If we can go to the next slide. Thank you. So this was, the framing here was around kind of like in 2025, which of these motions or channels were considered core for the company's go-to-market, and which ones were kind of experimental. So the call out there, average SaaS company has roughly 5 core and 5 experiments. So I think that the interesting things for me with this were, one, I was shocked that warm outbound has as much of a stronghold as a core motion for people as it does. But
can you define warm outbound?
No.
For the audience? Oh, yeah.
I'll let Kyle's
pull it up.
Context do that. But so LinkedIn, not surprising. SEO, not surprising. I think that despite people wanting to claim that that's dead, very much not. And it makes sense that, especially through this year, that that's remained a core motion. And then I was a little surprised that large conferences were considered experiment. However, I think given that a lot of that's been trying to build back since COVID, that there are probably a lot of companies who haven't ever done it, but are now trying to. And then again, intent-based outbound, I think that makes sense as experimentation, and was not surprised at all to see 47%. Having the AI discovery AEO stuff as something that they've been experimenting with this year.
Yep. Also, warm outbound indicates the prospect has a prior engagement or connection with you, while intent-based outbound indicates there's a signal of buyer interest.
Yeah.
Which makes sense.
Yep.
That's just good context.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very interesting to see. I do like that the large conferences were a bigger one. I mean, not in the experimentation. I mean, obviously it's core too.
Yep.
So there's equal, because that had a struggle for a while. I'm happy to see that that's coming back, because that means that, you know, I think that just shows that if you have a good product, you're going to invest in going out and talking to people. Like, there's a authenticity connected to that. I think that should play into your bigger brand perception, which is good.
I also wanted to call out, I think there, if you think about all the stuff that we went through on the advice from everyone, there's a lot that does feel like a really solid through line here. like intimate in-person events, 43% said core, 28% experiment. So fairly high on both of those. Founder brand is another one that I think came through, the AEO for sure. Podcast, not a big core motion, but was definitely on the higher side for experimentation. And then PR also, again, kind of on that, like, who would have thought that PR would be considered an experimentation channel,
right?
You know, at this point, again, kind of my point earlier versus 2 years ago. And the reality is that it is a new, there's new approaches and new motions, I think, that are why people are experimenting with that, that ties to that new buyer journey, the trust signals. Trust, I think, comes through on podcasts, founder brand, intimate in-person events. Like, that's, those are all very much the trust authority type of things too. So
the report also in more detail says that like 51% plan to increase go-to-market and investment in AI search. Do you think that that means like they do this next year, if that becomes core? It's already fairly high in the core, and not like super high, but it's got a high experimentation number. Does that shift? Do all those kind of shift over into core over like in the next year or two?
Well, potentially, because that's zooming out a bit on that, the commentary from the report, it said, looking ahead, B2B companies seem more prepared to add GTM channels than subtract them. And then it said areas where they're increasing GTM the most, like you mentioned, AEO, 51% plan to increase GTM investment in AI search. By comparison, only 14% to increase SEO investment.
Yeah.
Which is not saying that they're decreasing investment. It's, that's already so high on the core.
Yeah.
That it's logical that there are less people investing in that as an additional channel, but AEO much newer coming in. So, I think that there's a lot there. I think this is super helpful context. And then the next slide, this was interesting. So obviously on the x-axis you have popularity across B2B tech, and then the y you have likelihood of having a big impact. And so the black box considered tried and true, we'll call it SEO specifically to start, makes sense that, you know, your popularity across B2B tech is, it's almost all the way to the right. And then from like a likelihood of having big impact, because it has become highly competitive, and obviously some of the ambiguity around AI search as well, it does not surprise me that it, you know, if you had done this exact thing 2 years ago, it probably would have been as far right and just higher on the scale, would be my guess. So trending down towards oversaturated, but still kind of hanging out in there.
Yeah. I sense the AI search will be the next big thing that'll move up, and we'll move up into the black box, like we just said. A bunch of these other ones, when you like see it laid out like this, figuring it out for B2B brands, even across the spectrum, I don't know if that ends up working. Like Instagram, for example, I don't know what changed within Instagram, but I know there's a few brands. I think even like ClickUp does some really fun, interesting stuff on Instagram or on there, like on TikTok and social. So like, I think they've found something on, I don't know how successful it is, but they like make funny videos that are like in line with what you'd see from like YouTube or from influencers and stuff. So I think there's a path, but I don't know if it ends up becoming like the tried and true for B2B.
That feels like a lot of dots to connect. A wide space to connect those dots of, you know, funny videos being material. I mean, I think there's probably whatever brand loyalty and stuff like that.
Brand perception, though, if we're talking about it, that could be a thing. If you're really good on that, like, and the product's okay, then maybe that helps influence things and sentiment across the web.
Yeah. I guess my point is I need it to do what I need it to do.
Yeah.
Whether or not they make funny videos, and if I'm a customer and it's not doing what it needs to do for my team, like those videos are not keeping me there.
Totally.
But I agree. I understand they have some place in the mix. If you can pull that quadrant back up, thank you. Yeah. We talked about a little bit with the new motions, or like the adapting, the buyer, modern buyer, Reddit podcast PR are all there. B2B, like, TikTok and Instagram. I'm honestly surprised those are higher on the likelihood of having a big impact scale, than Reddit podcast or PR. But, I think that makes sense. To your point, AI search is, clearly moving up and to the right on this. So I think that's headed that way. And then, you know, founder brand, LinkedIn, I think those are largely falling in content responsibilities, you know, overall, yeah. Whether that's written content, video, any of that stuff. So, yeah, I think there's a lot there, but again, just in general, like there's some of our commentary, but I think overall there's a lot of insights for anyone who's planning, for next year. And then next slide, I think we have just a couple more. So this was, that same breakdown of ACV that we saw earlier,
mm-hmm.
but instead of looking at it from the inbound, outbound, you know, paid digital, ABM, all of those categorizations, it's now looking a little more specific at the channel. And so what's interesting is you see SEO claims number one spot as being the positioning here is it in your top three channel? And so we're looking at 44% saying SEO is in their top three channels for less than 5K ACV. So I think there's a huge tie there to that product-led motion for sure. And then tied for second in that 5 to 25K ACV. I was a little surprised since inbound was high, for some of the, I guess it wasn't the top one, but I was surprised it didn't at least make top three.
I guess it's not on here
for the greater than 25K, but generally I think this is a makes sense. Like the larger ACV, large conferences, intimate events, warm outbound, whereas at the lowest ACV you have SEO, paid ads, LinkedIn. And then if we want to just go ahead and shift the other categorization of less than a million, 1 to 10 million, and greater than 10 million ARR.
Yeah.
So then interestingly, that's where you see SEO come in at number two on the greater than 10 million. Is 43% saying that it's in their top three. And again, I think that ties pretty heavily to like the amount of brand authority, domain authority, like just a lot of stuff that's built up over time to get to that revenue scale. There's probably a lot of good tailwinds for SEO and
have
been investing in it longer and that kind of stuff.
For sure. I think it's interesting that it's SEO. I mean, a lot of them appear across all the categories, but SEO, like there's a gap from the 5 to 20, like once you get to 25K, it drops off and then only reappears at greater than 10 million, which is interesting.
Yeah.
And it like jumps back up to number two, which I'm not surprised by that, but
yeah.
I think there's probably some segmentation to be done there. Either way, I agree. I think it's like, I guess my big takeaway from this is that like, and this is actually, again, more of a compliment to like the work done here than it is like, it's not a criticism. It's that these make sense to me.
Agree.
Like, and
yeah,
and it is validating, and it should be for anybody planning for next year within any of these buckets, that these are areas worth investing in,
mm-hmm.
like continuing to invest in. If you're questioning SEO and you're less than 5K ACV, unless you're a like brand new product in a space that like we talk to those types of product companies all the time, and like there's not a ton of signal that you can find from like third-party tools around like the opportunity for SEO, totally get it. Like maybe that's not the first thing you want to do, but there's also validation that like it will grow. So like let's invest a little, but either way, it should give a marketing leader's confidence in some areas that they should prioritize.
Yes. And that's why I think that is probably the biggest takeaway is I'm sure there's rationale for why only the top three were shown. But obviously all of those channels are somewhere on that list.
Yeah.
So to your point, less than a million of ARR, of course your top three are going to be warm, outbound, and
right,
LinkedIn and founder brand. Like, that's a founder who's just grinding. They're pushing. They're hitting up everyone. Their VCs are making connections for them. Like,
yeah,
that makes it, like, does that mean they're not doing SEO? No, it just means it's not their top channels at the moment.
Right.
And again, like, that's not to say that everyone is a fit. Like, there's a lot that we work through with prospects and trying to make sure this is the right time for you to invest. This is like a good place to invest your money and a good channel for you and all that. So, a lot there, but I think certainly if you could see beyond just the top three, it would paint even more of a picture. So to your point, I'm not surprised by these at all.
Yep.
And I think we have one more or two more slides. Second to last one here. So this is what I was talking about earlier. The impact of AI is a mixed bag. So this was the level of impact from AI adoption. 22% saying no impact. 31% saying limited. 22% some.
24.
And then 24. Yeah, sorry, it's a little hard for me. Big
impact. I'm cheating. I have it on my pad.
Yes. And then I deleted it from my notes because we put it on the next slide. So there was a lot of like other nuance and like kind of some quotes from people. But if we go to the last slide, they kind of rolled up the insights there were. So it said those who are seeing a positive result cite three main areas of impact. One was outbound, one was market intelligence, and then the one I wanted to put here, specifically they said content marketing, including generating SEO and AEO blog content, GTM documentation, and personalized messaging. But then it says, while content use cases are widely popular, many said they've been disappointed with ROI beyond basic time savings for basic uses, which I thought was, again, spot on with what we've heard. Like, yeah. Absolutely. For the last 2 years, we have seen an incredible rise in the amount of, you know, ways people are using AI for content creation.
Right.
And, you know, you go back to whatever, Jasper, Copy AI, like some of those tools, like it's not a new thing. And I think the adoption has ramped up significantly. However, I think that reality is what we run into all the time talking with teams and prospects, that there's only so much they're really getting from it. And even, you know, now with far more advanced workflow and something like AirOps, compared to what you could do, you know, before with Jasper, still a lot of tinkering, a lot of human intervention. You still have to have the strategy, like the broader, like it is making things more efficient and it is accelerating velocity, but it is not like set it and forget it, click the button, you know? And so I think that commentary really kind of pulls that through, that like, yeah, we've seen it, but it's kind of just some time saving from basic tasks and whatnot.
I think it speaks a lot to and connects to kind of, or at least for me to connect the dots to a lot of the points made in the quotes. One, alchemy from Ryan. I think that's important.
Yes.
I think that is a reflection, that statement at the end is a reflection of like people just thinking that they can set it and forget it, and that there isn't this like extra actual like strategic input that has to go into it when you use those tools. Because if you do, I think there's this all or nothing mentality that everyone has about this, that like it's got to be, AI's got to do it. It's going to take it. It's going to make it easier. And then we're going to be done and we can focus and we can scale and grow. And that's not going to be the case. Like it's not going to, but then that ties to like, we have to accept that things aren't going to be perfect. Like keep tweaking things, right? Progress over perfection.
Yep.
So like, I think that's one of the struggles is like, there has to be a more balanced approach to all these things and making sure that, you know, you're using tools intelligently, not just using them blindly, partnering with people who know how to use those tools like us, and just being more thoughtful about it. But I think that's big. The alchemy piece is a big one because that's one of the things we're incorporating and Ryan and our team is doing a lot more of, is just making sure that there's really thought out workflows and process around how to create like really great content using AI. Whereas, and as he would attest to, and others we've worked with and clients who are doing the same thing, it's still hard. It is not a, just a easy
yep.
done thing.
Yep. Agree. Yeah. So, great report. Highly recommend, getting your hands on, all 30 pages of that, but also, like I said, we'll link to that takeaway post where you can get more of that context. And then if you're one of the 51% investing more in AEO or 14% investing more in SEO next year, certainly would be happy to chat with you and figure out how we could help augment your team and help you go faster. With that, I think we'll wrap up. Best of luck with all of your 2026 planning. And yeah, see you next time.
Thank you.